If you love playing druids, if you love turning into all sorts of beasts when fighting your opponents in D&D, or if you just love doing a ton of damage in your combat encounters, you're gonna love this one. Welcome to D4. Hey everybody, so here at D4, each week we take a deep dive into one, sometimes two, specific character builds for our favorite TTRPGs. We crunch numbers about them, we theorycraft about them, not so that I can tell you the right way or the best way to play a character, but to explore one potential way to build a character that you are thinking about playing in-game, with the hopes of creating something that's both really powerful, but also really fun to play. So if you enjoy creating characters for your favorite role-playing games almost as much as you enjoy playing the actual game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on how to build a character that you're thinking about playing, then welcome home. This is where you belong. I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for being here. My name's Colby. Before we jump in, just FYI, a little housekeeping thing here. I am actually going to be taking some time off over the next month or so to enjoy some summer vacation time with my family. This means that I'm actually just going to go down to like a video every other week for the next month or so, meaning I'll probably just miss a couple of regular Tuesday releases. I hope you can forgive me. I will be filming while we're out of town, so it's going to look and feel different over the next couple of videos over the next month, but doing this will just kind of let me work like half time so that I can spend a little more time with my family, and being a good dad and partner while we're exploring a different part of the world is really important to me. So thank you. Thank you for your consideration. Alright, so Kelly and Monty came out with their Druid multiclass video recently, at least as of this recording. Check it out right here if you haven't seen it, and you know what that means. Time to do another Dungeon Dudes inspired video. Now, this time they did me a huge favor and just challenged me to specifically do a build around one particular multiclass, the Druid Paladin. All right, so there are definitely some challenges to putting these two classes together. First and foremost, the ability scores. This character is just going to be super mad, and there is no way around it. We need at least a 13 in strength, charisma, and wisdom, and we don't really want to be dumping constitution either. That's rough. Fortunately, of course, druids have wild shape, and one really great thing about wild shape is that when you transform into your beast, you keep your own mental ability scores, right? Your wisdom, intelligence, charisma, but you take on the physical ability scores of the beast you transform into, their strength, their constitution, their dexterity. So it seems like taking advantage of wild shape might be the best way to not worry quite so much about keeping a high strength score, among other things, if we want to be taking advantage of other paladin abilities, and being able to do damage, of course. However, there is a pretty big drawback to wild shape, and it's that you can't cast spells while wild shaped, right? At least not until Druid 18, and that means no heals, no spell damage or control spells, unless it's something you're concentrating on that you cast before transforming, of course. So if you're going to try to take big advantage of wild shape, you're going to want to find a way to use your spell slots in a way that doesn't actually require you to be casting spells. Yeah. This paladin dip is starting to sound better and better. I mean, moon druids are great, because bears, but sometimes playing one can feel a little disappointing. At very early levels, sure, you are a god among mortals, but before too long, you kind of become a subpar damage dealer who can't really do the thing that druids tend to naturally just really excel at, supporting their allies. And that's the thing that, once you really dig into it, makes a paladin dip so fantastic with moon druids. It's going to give us a big boost to our damage and still let us bring a bit of support, all while staying in our wild-shaped form, meaning that we get to have our druid support cake and still eat the big damage we want from better wild-shaped forms too, with a fairly minimal investment. Now, even though we will be starting out as druid on this one, it's not going to be mostly druid for a while. Like I said in my Cosmic Controller video a couple weeks ago, this one's absolutely inspired by the Dungeon Dudes, but I'm not really sticking to their rules about a character having to be mostly one class with only a dip into something else, right? I'm just straight up trying to build the best character I can who starts druid and also has some paladin levels. And maybe a third class while we're at it, because why not? I will give myself this one rule. I can never have more classes in something else than I have in Druid. All right? Finally, one thing I wanted to add, I did have this really awesome build for a Paladin Druid multi-class that I was originally planning on using for this build. I was so excited about it. It was really powerful and had a ton of great thematic and conceptual synergy too, but in the end, it just didn't work all that great as a character that started off and was mostly a Druid. It just works way, way better as a character who starts off and is mostly, at first at least, a Paladin. So I decided to shelve that build for now, and maybe I'll bring it out when Kelly and Monty do their Paladin multi-class video. We'll see. But yes, for this build, I think they were right when they said,
Colby, what do you think? Moon Druid, Paladin, do we got something here?
And spoiler alert here, this one seriously goes to the moon. Pun intended. So, I proudly present D&D build number 139, the Moonburst, the Moon Druid Nova, the Super Bear. How about the Supernova Moon? Huge thanks to my good friend Randall Hampton for the fantastic artwork that he put together for this build. He does this every week. I love what he comes up with. If you're interested in following him to check out the other art that he does, or reaching out to him to see if you can commission him to create some art for your character or your entire party for that matter, I will put links in the video description as always. Thanks, Randall. Also, before we jump into the build, you guys have to hear about the sponsor today. All right, everyone is talking about like solo D&D lately, right? Ginny D recently made a video about it. Triant Monk is running characters through CMCC's Gauntlet. Well, if that piques your interest, you're going to love The Wolves of Langston. This is an adventure that you can run your favorite D&D character through all by yourself. No DM or allies needed. Just you, the PDF or book, and some dice. So awesome. You better believe I'm going to be playing this on the plane when I head out on vacation tomorrow. So here's how it works. You make your D&D character, any D&D character, heck, maybe even this build, right? And man, that's exciting. I want to do like all 137 of them. You buy the PDF or the ebook or the paperback or even the hardback of Wolves of Langston. You open the book, you read, you follow the directions as you go. You're going to be rolling dice, you're going to be making choices along the way for what path you want your character to take, and then you'll just be turning to different pages of the book based on the decisions you make and the rolls you make. So yes, you absolutely get to take your own path through an interactive story here where your decisions and successes or failures have real consequences. You'll be fighting monsters, casting spells, finding treasures, as well as interacting with NPCs in your environment, using skills to overcome challenges, all like an actual D&D game, just flying solo. And yes, the replay value here is really high since there are so many different branching paths you could take based on your decisions, based on your character, based on your roles. You can even get a self-DM pack for free on their website if you want to like guide yourself through the adventure in a more traditional manner, as well as some ambient music for free too, so you can more fully immerse yourself in the world while you play. Anyway, don't hesitate to check out Wolves of Langston because they're having a sale right now where you save a few bucks if you order soon, and it's only a few bucks to begin with, at least for the PDF and ebook versions. So go here to the website to check them out. Please use that link so that they know I sent you. I will put that link in the video description, as always, of course. And yeah, this is just going to be a really great way to play that character or three that you've been wanting to try, but you don't have a way to fit them in at your current table. I seriously cannot wait to try this myself. So, huge thanks to Obvious Mimic, the publishers of Wolves of Langston, and let's jump into the build. All right, at level 1 for our starting class, yes, like I said, we're starting Druid here, meaning that when we first meet our champion, they are a nature-loving, tree-hugging hippie. I mean, of course, they don't have to be, right? Maybe you're a reluctant Druid. A lot of people play reluctant warlocks. Maybe you were simply raised by wolves and had no choice in the matter. Maybe you're a little bit ambivalent even toward the natural world, but for some strange reason, it seems drawn to you, despite your ambivalence, and part of your character's journey will be to learn to love this power that you almost unwillingly seem to have been granted. I think if it were me, yes, I'd make myself a fierce protector of nature. Perhaps one who even has a bit of a violent streak in them, unafraid to unleash the powerful wrath against any who would seek to throw the world into unbalance, or prey upon the soft and gentle things of the world. As for our race, In case it wasn't obvious, yes, I'm planning on building this character as a Burst or Nova damage dealer, meaning that we'll be trying to see how much damage we can get out of a single round of combat, right? Expending all kinds of resources to just try and eliminate an enemy or two right at the beginning of the fight. Now, one thing about focusing on Nova damage, it's generally best if you can get your Burst right at the beginning of the fight, right? Right at round one. The quicker you can blow an enemy up, the better off it will be for your team, since it will prevent those enemies from doing things to harm your allies and make their lives miserable. But thanks to the power of spells, especially concentration spells, I often find myself building Nova characters that might not actually be getting into their big burst damage until like round two. I decided with this character to just forego the usual there and go big on round one. For that reason, I think the best racial option, mechanically at least, is going to be Bugbear here. Bugbears are one of the strongest racial options to come out of MOM a few months ago, Monsters of the Multiverse. They have some really great features. Long-limbed gives them an extra 5 feet of reach on melee attacks, though I don't believe we'd benefit from that while wild-shaped. Sneaky gives us stealth proficiency and some kind of strange ability to move through and stop in a space large enough for only a small creature. But the main thing we're here for, of course, is surprise attack, which tells us that if we hit a creature with an attack roll, we do an extra 2d6 of damage if it hasn't taken a turn in combat yet. I'm honestly really surprised that Wizards of the Coast didn't limit this to once on a turn, but they didn't. So if we hit an enemy multiple times, so long as they haven't had their turn yet in this combat encounter, we get to add 2d6 of damage to each one of those hits. We're gonna get a lot of mileage out of this. As for our ability scores, I assume we're going point by as always and say we ought to take a 14 in wisdom and a +2 from our racial there, a 13 strength, a 13 in charisma and a +1 there, and then just a 14 constitution. There aren't any like wisdom half feats that we really need, so starting with a 16 was fine here, and that way we could still get to a 14 constitution, which will be nice for our health and our constitution saving throws and concentration checks. I figure we might as well get a 14 charisma since, again, when wild shaped, we'll be keeping our own mental abilities, so it felt more important than getting a 13 strength to me. As for our starting equipment, just pick like the standard stuff. Most of it's just gonna meld into our body when we wild shape anyways, so there's not really a lot that we have to have here. The best armor you can get, probably hide, unless you and or your DM allow metal armor on druids. A wooden shield, probably a quarterstaff for shillelagh purposes later on, right? But then as a druid one, we get druidic, which is basically like the secret language of druids that just lets them like leave messages for one another using twigs and leaves and things. And then we get spells. I'd plan on getting guidance for mostly some nice out of combat utility, granting an extra d4 to you or an ally on the next ability check made. And then yeah, I think I would grab shillelagh here in case you find yourself in combat and out of wild shape uses mostly. Beyond that, I'd focus on our best healing spells, which for us are going to be Healing Word for a bonus action heal from range, right? And then Good Berry, of course, which provides both some nice utility and efficient healing. Gives you 10 berries, they heal for 1 hit point each if consumed, but also provide the person who eats one with sustenance for an entire day. Like some fruity lembas bread. That sounds yummy. At level 2, though, we get Wild Shape, and we better take a deep dive here because there are a lot of rules around Wild Shape, and some of us might need some reminders. Right now, let me mention the things that are the same for all druids, whether moon druids or not. We get 2 uses of Wild Shape per short rest, and can use it to turn into a beast that we have seen before, that's important, that doesn't have a swimming or flying speed, at least until higher level. We can stay transformed a number of hours equal to half our druid level rounded down, so 1 hour for now. When we transform, we keep our alignment and personality and mental ability scores, like I said, but all other game statistics change to the beasts. This includes armor class, hit points, strength, dexterity, constitution. We keep our skill and saving throw proficiencies and add the beasts as well, though if the beast form has a higher stat than we do, we use theirs. They're not like added together if we both have proficiency in something, right? When our hit points are reduced to 0, we simply revert back to our humanoid form, with any extra damage that took us to 0 carrying over into our humanoid form hit points. Thus, when wild shaped, we're naturally pretty dang tanky, since we're essentially adding the beast form's hit points on top of our regular hit point pool, right? As I've mentioned, we can't cast spells while transformed, though we can concentrate on spells that we've already cast. Finally, we retain the benefit of any features from our class or race or other source and can use them so long as our new form is capable of doing so. Thus, we should still be able to benefit from the bugbear surprise attack, for example, but not, I don't think, their long-limbed feature, since we're physically altering our form and thus our limbs wouldn't be super long like a bugbear's normally are, right? Of course, your DM may rule otherwise and say you just transform into a beast with unusually long limbs, but I have to believe that most tables would nix that. One more thing. Thanks to the Wild Companion feature, all level 2 druids can expend a use of their wild shape to summon a familiar via the Wizard's Find Familiar spell. Unfortunately, it also only lasts for a number of hours equal to half our druid level, as opposed to just kind of until it dies, which is typically how Find Familiar works. This makes me sad, but yes, I am going to assume that we have a familiar when I'm crunching numbers. You might not want to, especially if you don't get that many short rests at your table to be constantly refreshing your wild shape uses, right? But summoning, like, you know, an owl familiar would let us potentially have advantage on our first attack on our turn if we have the familiar take our help action. And owls are really nice because they have flyby, right? So they can swoop in, help, fly away without taking an opportunity attack. And having advantage on that first attack is going to do really good things for our numbers. All right. In addition to Wild Shape, then, yes, druids also get their subclass at level 2, their Druid Circle, and as I've said, we are going Circle of the Moon. This basically just enhances our Wild Shape in all kinds of ways. First up, thanks to the Combat Wild Shape feature, we can transform as a bonus action instead of an action like other druids. That's going to be super important for those of us wanting to go Nova right on round 1, right? What's more, we can also use our spell slots to heal ourselves while in Wild Shape form, healing for 1d8 per spell slot spent, which is one really nice way to help us stay in beast form for longer, and use those spell slots that we otherwise don't get a ton of use out of in combat anyway. Though of course we will have a great use for those spell slots soon enough. Better yet, as a moon druid, we get the circle forms feature, which lets us transform into a beast with a challenge rating of 1 or lower, as opposed to the measly 1/4 challenge rating or lower that other druids get. What's more, once we hit druid 6, we can transform into beasts with a CR of our druid level divided by 3, rounded down. So at level 6, we could do CR 2, at level 9, we could do CR 3, etc. So, of course, the question on everyone's mind is, what beast should we be transforming into here? And the answer, of course, is the same as the answer to every question that's ever been asked by humankind since the dawn of time. Bears. Of course, there are plenty of cool and interesting and fun and potentially useful options here, but at CR1, it's hard to beat the brown bear. Their AC isn't great, it's only an 11, but they have a very respectable 34 hit points, a great 40-foot move speed, and most importantly, they have both multi-attack and the highest hit chance of any CR1 beast. That will become increasingly important as we add more and more damage to our attacks. So yeah, we are a level 2 character with an extra 34 hit points who can attack twice on our turn, once with a bite for a d8 plus 4 damage, and once with our claws for 2d6 plus 4 damage. That is incredibly strong for level 2. Probably stronger than just about any other character in D&D 5e, I might argue. Maybe with the exception of a raging, recklessly attacking barbarian who went custom lineage so they could start with an 18 strength and the polearm master feat. Anyway, we're really strong. But at level 3, I think it's time for our pally dip. Sure, I'd love to keep going druid for a bit, but the truth is this. As great as moon druids are at very early levels, they scale really, really poorly. This, of course, is due to the fact that beasts in D&D 5e scale really, really poorly. We'll get into that more a bit later, but for now, I think at this point in our character's career, they're maybe wanting a more formal or rigorous approach to their protection of the wilds. This might not come in the form of like a religion or a worship of a deity, though as a druid, I don't think there's any reason you couldn't be a follower of a deity of nature, right? For me, I think I might just want my character here to like swear an oath or formally declare their commitment to defending the natural world or avenging themselves upon those who have harmed her. And that is how we gain our paladin powers. Regardless of how you get here though, at paladin 1 we get divine sense, which lets us detect any celestials, fiends, or undead within 60 feet of us that aren't behind total cover as an action, and we can do this 1 plus charisma modifier times per day. But then we get the super handy feature, lay on hands. Oh boy. The dad energy is strong today. Okay, this ability is fantastic in that it gives us 5 lay on hands points per paladin level, which we can use with our touch and as an action to heal 1 hit point per point spent. We can also cure poison or disease for 5 points. Right, so like I said at the beginning, druids want to be supporting their allies, right? Even moon druids are still getting access to all those fantastic druid support spells. The problem is, it's hard to use those fantastic heals and things if we're a bear. Enter Lay on Hands. As I was keen to point out in the barbarian support character that I did a while back, which was also, by the way, I think inspired by the dungeon dudes, Lay on Hands is most definitely not casting a spell. And as far as I can tell, there's no reason why you couldn't use this while wild-shaped. So now you can be bouncing back unconscious allies with a point from Lay on Hands without having to come out of bear form, and I love that a lot. At level 4, we would be a paladin 2, and that means we get the feature that is the main mechanical reason we came paladin in the first place, the one, the only, Divine Smite. This tells us that when we hit with a melee weapon attack, we can spend a spell slot to do 1d8 extra radiant damage, plus 1d8 more for every spell slot we spend higher than first level. This caps at 5d8 or 4th level spell slots. Now, some of you might be wondering if this would work in bear form, since we're using natural weapons and not conventional ones. If you believe this tweet by Jeremy Crawford, then yes, it does. Fantastic. Now we've got another really great way to pile on some big damage to our burst round. Now, paladins also get a fighting style at level 2, but oddly, there aren't a lot that we can make great use of here. Most of them require us to be wielding weapons or wearing armor or a shield, and in wild shape form, we're not doing any of those things. Obviously, your DM might hand wave this and say, yeah, I'll just consider your claws as being wielded for this purpose, so go ahead. But otherwise, we're probably going to want to take either Blessed Warrior, which gives us a couple of cleric cantrips, or Blind Fighting, which I think is the superior choice here since we already have druid cantrips and there's a lot of overlap with druid and cleric cantrips. Blind Fighting is nice in that we straight up just have blindsight to a range of 10 feet, letting us see even invisible creatures if they're close to us. We also get paladin spells at this level. This is a really great level for us, and while there are plenty of good ones to consider, keep in mind that we use our charisma modifier for paladin spells, so I just plan on grabbing stuff that works regardless of our spell modifier, right? And of course, the best one of that group is absolutely the Bless spell. It's one of the best buffs in game, granting up to 3 of our party members, including us, potentially, a d4 on all of our attack rolls and saving throws. Now, it takes an action to cast and requires our concentration, so that's the big downside here. Plus, it only lasts for 1 minute. Regardless, I think I'm going to assume that you've got Bless going when combat starts. This might be too much of a stretch. Very often, combat happens in D&D without a lot of warning, but at least at our table, that tends to be the exception to the rule. More often than not, a combat encounter is fairly heavily telegraphed, whether because someone in your party is scouting ahead, or because you've got a big bad monologuing or something, right? I'm hoping that most of the time you'll be able to see combat coming and get a Bless spell off right before. Some of you might think that's cheesy, and if you can't do this, don't worry about it. It's not going to be a huge impact on our numbers, and if combat starts and you don't have Bless going, you're generally going to be better off just attacking thanks to our Bugbear surprise attack feature, right? Unless you're up against enemies with a really high armor class. One last thing. Don't forget that thanks to multiclassing with Druid and Paladin, we do have second level spell slots now, even though we don't have any second level spells to cast them with, which will be great for Divine Smite purposes. Alright, so at level 5, with Divine Smite under our belt and our ability to turn into a bear, sure, while I'd love to grab an oath in Paladin here, Oath of the Ancients would be thematically fantastic, Oath of Vengeance would be great for some on-demand advantage, I think we'd be better off leaving Paladin behind. But alas, I don't think it's time to go back to Druid just yet. I mean, we're a burst damage character, right? I'm sure you smell some fighter levels coming. I know I do. So, I suppose at this point in our career, we're wanting to focus a little more on honing our martial prowess. We don't want to just be any old bear. We want to be a trained, wrathful, furious, fighting bear. You don't have to go fighter levels, of course, but it will do amazing things for our Nova round. And let me just say this. Usually, if you're like a martial character, you're kind of crazy for getting out of whatever class you start with before you get to extra attack, right? That's one beautiful thing about moon druids and about bears. You get multi-attack as soon as you can turn into a bear. You don't have to wait till level 5. And in fact, extra attack wouldn't do a lot for this character. Later on, maybe, we'll get into it. But for now especially, it doesn't hurt nearly as much for a moon druid to be taking even a third multi-class dip this early in our character's career. Anyway, as a fighter 1, we get second wind. This lets us heal for a D10 plus our fighter level with a bonus action once per short rest, and yeah, no reason why we couldn't use this in bear form, as far as I can tell. So it's a nice way to stay in bear form a little bit longer, and doesn't even cost us a spell slot or lay on hands points for the self-heal. Nice. And then we get a very important second fighting style. And as a fighter, that means the vastly superior technique. Wow. I gotta talk to my writer. Superior technique lets us learn one maneuver from the Battlemaster maneuver list. We get a D6 to spend on that maneuver, which resets on a short rest, and yes, we are totally going with trip attack here, which says that when we hit a creature with a weapon attack, don't know why it couldn't be a natural weapon, we can add that superiority die in damage and force the enemy, if they're large or smaller, to make a strength save, which for us will have a DC based on our strength modifier. And in brown bear form, that's a 19 or plus 4. Not bad. If they fail the save, they are knocked prone, and for those of us making attacks within 5 feet of a prone enemy, that means we get advantage on attacks. And that's awesome, since the first attack will have advantage thanks to our familiar, and now all the rest of them will too. And there will be lots of them, because at level 6, we'd be a fighter 2, and that means we get the almighty action surge, so we can, once per short rest, lots of short rest reset abilities on this character, I'm noticing. I hope you talk about this during session 0 with your party and your DM, and hopefully convince everybody how important it will be for your character to get as many short rests as possible. Anyway, once per short rest, now we can take 2 actions on our turn instead of 1. And thus, the core of our supernova moon is complete. Just in time for our first damage report. Alright. So here are the things that I'm assuming. When combat breaks out, you've got your familiar active and the bless spell going. I'm also assuming their enemy is large or smaller, and that they fail their save against our trip attack, and that we're making attacks against an enemy who hasn't taken their first turn in combat yet. That's a lot of assumptions. If those things aren't true, you'll want to lower these numbers just a tad. If they are, we'll have advantage on all of our attacks, which is wunderbar. Tactically, things are pretty straightforward. We wild shape with a bonus action, assuming we're not in wild shape form, which we could be, it lasts for an hour, right? But if we're not, we wild shape with a bonus action, then run up to the nearest enemy who hasn't gone yet, and with our familiar's help, make a claw attack against them, smiting at the second level and applying our trip attack superiority die and our bugbear surprise attack. Once the enemy's prone, we bite them, again smiting at the second level and adding surprise attack. Then we action surge and do it all again, this time just without the superiority die, and only smiting with first level spell slots since we've used up all of our second level ones. If everything hits, we would be doing a total of 13d6 plus 12d8 plus 16 damage on this one round. Yikes. And against enemies with a 10 armor class, we would on average do 124 damage here. And against an enemy with a 15 armor class, it would be 112 damage.
Flip table.
Seriously? Super Bear, where have you been all my life? How has it taken me so long to do this? Yeah, surprisingly, the most powerful level 2 character does amazing burst damage when you combine them with 2 of the most powerful 2-level dips in D&D 5e for burst damage. Who'd have thought? So yeah, this is beating out every single Nova damage character I have ever built to date at this level. Check the video description for links to the spreadsheets and graphs that show you those comparisons. Even the cheater face shepherd druid. I'm so happy. Now, sure, we are making a lot of assumptions here that might not always pan out, like I've said. But even if they don't, the potential for pain on this character is astronomical. And especially considering that we're just jumping right in and doing damage without taking a setup round. I mean, how many enemies are you fighting at level 6 that have 112 hit points? Very, very few. Alright. Let's all calm down. Moon druids are notorious for not scaling very well, so maybe we come back to Earth here after a while, yeah? Let's find out. So, at level 7, now that we've got extra attack and trip attack and smite, we're finally gonna go back to druid. And this is something you're gonna be hearing a lot today. While there are a lot of great spell options here, there aren't any that we'll be using for our Nova round, so feel free to focus on some good out-of-combat utility and support stuff like Pass Without Trace to give your entire party a flat plus 10 to their stealth checks, Lesser Restoration to cure all sorts of nasty conditions. Another good one to consider here, actually, would be Summon Beast. It requires our concentration, so it means no bless. But if you're finding that you just aren't getting bless off very often or ever before combat starts, it's worth considering this spell instead, since the beast you summon here lasts for an hour, which means it's much more likely that you'll have this going when combat breaks out, regardless of whether or not you're able to cast it right before you roll initiative, right? Summon beasts bring a really nice bit of sustained damage to the fight. At level 8, we would be a druid 4, and that means we get an ability score increase or feat, our first. I think we got a bump wisdom here, bringing it up to an 18. No, it doesn't actually do much for our Nova damage, but we're a druid. We want to have a high spell DC and give some bumps to our healing and things, right? We do make a decent combat triage support character thanks to Lay on Hands, but out of combat we can really shine. And sure, you may play at a table where you aren't getting a short rest after every fight or two, which means you might fall back to a more like primary support role in some combat encounters, which is fine, actually. And some of you might prefer this so that you get a little variety in your playstyle from encounter to encounter, right? Especially in that case, bumping that wisdom is gonna be super important. Don't forget, thanks to multiclassing, we do get third level spell slots now for bigger and better smites. Also, at Druid 4, we can now wild shape into beasts with a swim speed. They can still only be CR1 beasts for now, so you might want to consider something like the giant octopus. They're a lot of fun. They let you make a 15-foot reach tentacle attack that automatically grapples and restrains an enemy if you hit them. You wouldn't be doing as much burst damage, or sustained really for that matter, but it really might be fun to mix it up once in a while, and automatically grappling and restraining enemies with a successful attack is a pretty powerful form of control that's really going to help out your entire party. But at level 9, I think I want just one more level in Fighter. Just one more, I promise. It will be really happy for our Nova round. Feel free to stay Druid, but for me, I want Fighter 3 so I can get my Fighter subclass, my Martial Archetype, because that means we can go... No, not Echo Knight. If I had a nickel for every time someone in the comments told me that I should have taken Echo Knight on a build, I'd have like a whole jar full of nickels. So many nickels. My original plan actually was to go Echo Knight with this build, but alas, we run into one very big problem. Unleash Incarnation, which Echo Knights use to get some extra attacks on their turn, only works when we take the attack action. And alas, the thing that was so cool about being a bear at level 2, like I've talked about, multi-attack, the thing that makes us not need 5 levels in a martial class to get 2 attacks on our turn, right, is the thing that hurts us here, because taking the multi-attack action is not, rules as written, the same thing as taking the attack action, and that bums me out. Now, yes, we could go, say, 5 levels of fighter to get extra attack, and then on our turn, take the attack action and make 2 claw attacks in bear form instead of the multi-attack action, right? And then be able to benefit from Unleash Incarnation, but I don't know. We're already delaying druid levels too much as it is, I think. I suppose at the end of the day, that would get us more burst damage during our Nova round, but it would delay things until then, right? And it's just a really heavy investment to get there. Especially if we're trying to stick to my never more levels in any other class than we have in Druid rule. So instead, I'm going Battlemaster. It's gonna add some nice D8s to our burst damage, give us more maneuvers to play with, and also give us more opportunities to trip if our target makes their saving throw against our first trip attack, right? Right. So, we already know how superiority dice work, but with Battlemaster we get 4 more superiority dice per short rest, and these are D8s instead of the D6 we got with Superior Technique. We also get to learn 3 more maneuvers, which is just awesome. I think for this build, I'd probably go with Menacing Attack, which is going to also add a D8 of damage to your attack, but cause the target you hit to be frightened of you, unless they make a Wisdom save. That's great for you and your entire party. And then probably Goading Attack here, I think, to add damage, but then also apply a really nice soft taunt to the enemy, like I'm always trying to do with my tank builds, right? I think I use this in the Dampier tank. Giving the enemy disadvantage on attacks against anyone but you until your next turn is awesome. And I mean, we are a bear with tons of extra hit points. We might as well be a tank once in a while instead of just be tanky, right? And then I think I'd probably pick up Rally here. We're a druid, we're a supporty bear. This lets us give temporary hit points to an ally equal to our superiority die roll plus our charisma modifier. Glad we took a 14 there. And that can be a nice way to ensure that someone getting low stays in a fight a little bit longer. All right, It's time for a damage report at level 9, and since last check, the main ways that we've increased our burst damage is via higher spell slots for smiting, and more superiority dice for extra damage if we want to use all or most of them in a single round. I can definitely see us going trip attack on the first attack, then using menacing attacks or goading attacks on subsequent hits that turn to both do some extra damage and also provide a solid debuff while we're at it. We've also, of course, picked up some nice support capabilities through higher spells and a better wisdom score. But against an enemy with a 10 AC here, we would on average do 159 damage, and against an enemy with a 16 armor class, it would be 138 during our Nova round. And that is still really solid, of course, but we've definitely seen a fairly sharp plateau here compared to a lot of other tier 1 Nova builds at this level. By comparison, we're more like middle of the pack tier 1 instead of top of the class. No worries, we're still doing very solid burst damage and bringing a lot of tankiness, support, and utility to our party, so I feel really great about the spot that we're in. At level 10, we're going back to Druid, and so we'd be a Druid 5. That means we get third level Druid spells here, and again, while there are a lot of fantastic options, there's nothing here I'm planning on using during our Nova round, so I'm just gonna say PYF, pick your favorites. Aura of Vitality is perfect for us, as it's one of the best out-of-combat heal spells in-game. Revivify, of course, is important so that we can have a resurrection option. Dispel Magic is always useful, and you might want to even consider an Erupting Earth or Sleet Storm to be used when you're not able to Wild Shape, giving you some nice area of effect damage and control. And, okay, fine, sure. Conjure Animals is available here if you feel like cheating. At level 11, we would be a Druid 6, and that means we get Primal Strike. This is a pretty important feature that some of you might have been complaining that we took this long to get to. It simply tells us that our beast form attacks count as magical for the purpose of overcoming resistance to non-magical attacks. So yes, there are lots of monsters that have this resistance in D&D 5e, and the higher level you go, the more of them there seem to be. That said, it's still a minority of enemies that have this resistance. So this may be a big deal in your campaign, or it might have only impacted you for one or two fights. I'd definitely encourage you to talk things over with your DM early on, like you should with every character, really, and express this concern, see if they'd be willing to advise or guide you in this matter. Not that we want to get super metagamey here, but just to make sure that we're not going to be feeling a lot of frustration with our decisions that could take weeks or months of play sessions to correct if we make a poor choice, right? Of course, that said, you could always hopefully find like an insignia of claws, magic item, or something similar that would make your natural weapons magical and give them a plus one to boot. That would, I think, probably be my top priority magic item on this build. If you play at a table where magic items are fairly common and or your DM allows you to craft them or buy them, etc. But that kind of brings me to another point that I've been wanting to discuss about this build and about Moon Druids in general. I mean, we also finally at this level get the ability to wild shape into beasts of challenge rating 2 or lower, so we can finally, after 9 character levels, do something other than a brown bear. I'm guessing a lot of you are probably a little frustrated that I've put this off for so long, thinking that the best moon druids just go straight moon druid so that they can get to bigger and better beasts. But that's the problem with moon druids, isn't it? Beasts just don't scale all that well in 5e. I think our best option here for a supernova moon druid like we've built is just to take the polar bear or cave bear option, and like the brown bear before it, these bears are the only ones with a plus 7 to hit and multi-attack, and when we're smiting and surprise attacking and superiority dicing on every hit, more attacks are just so much more important than, say, a stronger attack on a hit, and a high plus to hit chance is as well. The amount of damage we actually do with the natural weapon attacks themselves is the least important thing to be looking at here. So sure, the giant constrictor snake is great in that it can grapple and restrain targets, but it only has a plus 6 to hit and only gets one attack. The giant crayfish gets multi-attack and their claws automatically grapple too, but they only have a plus 4 to hit. And this is the biggest weakness of the Moon Druid, I think. Your allies are probably rocking rare or very rare magic weapons at this point. There might even be a legendary one out there. With a plus 5 ability score, adding their proficiency bonus to their hit chance and a plus 2 or plus 3 to hit weapon, your companions might be running around with a plus 11 or a plus 12 to hit, right? Even if we got an insignia of the claws here, as a cave bear, we'd be a plus 8 at best while in beast form. And it's kind of why, if you want to keep up in damage as a moon druid, you're sort of forced to multiclass like we've been doing, right? It's also why I really, really love the idea of having beast templates like they're trying to do with 1D&D, even though I think their first pass at them was poorly done. If they can tweak those and build in some better scaling and ability to customize them, like with a list of abilities and features that you can choose from maybe to attach to your template, then I think we have a much better system for Moon Druids that don't feel like they're the gods of D&D 5e early on and then increasingly worthless as they level. One nice thing about the path that we've chosen is that the poor scaling on beasts matters a lot less to us than it might if we had put all of our eggs into the wild-shaped moon druid basket, right? In fact, I might even argue that building for Nova damage is the best way to build a Moon Druid. Sure, those extra 30 or 40 hit points in your wild shape form are nice, but with a low armor class, and especially as we get into mid game and higher, you might get knocked out of your wild shape in 2 or 3 hits. That matters a lot less to us if we're going Nova right on round 1 and blowing up an enemy or two. After that, if we get knocked out of wild shape, it's not that big a deal. We've already swung the fight heavily in our favor and can just fall back to heal, buff, and debuff with maybe a shillelied staff attack peppered in here and there to help finish off the stragglers, right? Good times. All right, that was a long detour. Don't forget, we do also at this level get 4th level spell slots now as well, thanks to multiclassing, letting us smite for our 5d8 cap if we wanted to use the spell slot for it. At level 12, we would be a druid 7, and that means 4th level spells, same as always, nothing here we're going to use during our Nova round, but Blight can be a decent single target burst damage spell, Guardian of Nature can be a fun transformation spell to pull out if you're out of wild shape uses, but better yet, Polymorph, of course. It would be, I think, really fun to get popped out of your bear form and then suddenly become a T-Rex next round instead. Your enemies are just gonna be like, "Stop hitting that one! Every time we do, it just gets stronger!" We're like the Hulk of D&D. At level 13, we would be a Druid 8, and that means another ability score increase or feat. And instead of capping our wisdom here, I think I'd actually probably take something here that might make a lot of you give me some side eye. I'm gonna suggest Magic Initiate, or Ritual Caster. Sure, I'd love to cap Wisdom, but here's the thing. We only ever get 2 uses of Wild Shape per short rest, until we're Druid 20, which we will never get to on this character. And I've been assuming all this time that you're using one of those for a familiar. That's just not gonna work very well for a lot of you when the familiar doesn't just last until it dies and we can't just resummon it as a ritual. Right? Sure, at this level, the familiar hangs out for 4 hours, so you might be okay. But very soon, we're potentially going to be using both of our wild shape charges for a single transformation, and I really want to still have that familiar so I can get advantage on my first attack when I try to trip my enemy and knock them prone. Magic Initiate or Ritual Caster would both let us get the Find Familiar spell, so we could now have our familiar permanently, or at least until it dies, and then resummon it as a ritual later, even if it did. I mean, for that reason, you might have even wanted to grab one of these feats back at level 8 if you're feeling really short on wild shape uses. If you find yourself getting more short rests than you really need at your table, feel free to skip on this one, but just remember, we can't cast spells while wild shape, so if we truly want to be spellcasting to heal and buff and things between combat encounters, we're gonna have to be popping back into humanoid form to do so, so even though we can stay wild shape for 4 hours at a time right now, we might not be doing so just out of necessity, right? Don't forget also, at Druid 8 here, we can now transform into beasts with a flying speed, which will mostly be handy for utility purposes, I think. Giant eagles are great, but they won't do nearly as much damage on most combat encounters as a cave bear would. Alright, for our level 13 damage report. Since last check, we've improved our beast form slightly to a cave or polar bear, giving us a little more damage on a hit, and more importantly, a better hit chance. We also have the spell slots of a 9th level full caster, meaning we could potentially smite for 5d8 with all 4 of our attacks on our Nova round if we really wanted to burn all of those spell slots to do so. I'm not suggesting we do, I'm just exploring the limits of what's possible, as always. Finally, we've picked up a lot of nice utility, support, and even survivability options for our character as well. And so, against enemies with a 10 armor class, we would on average do 193 damage here during our Nova round, and against enemies with a 17 armor class, it would be 167 damage. And while that is still very good, it also shows continued plateauing compared to other Nova builds that I've built to date, putting us more like bottom of tier 1, top of tier 2 compared to others at this level. We support better than most of them, at least when we're not in bear form, right? And I mean, hey, to be hitting this hard as a mostly druid character, still feels pretty awesome to me. Coming down the home stretch at level 14, we would be a druid 9. That means 5th level spells and PYF. None that we're going to be using during our Nova round, but tons of great ones to choose from. Cone of Cold is a strong AoE burst damage option. Awaken is potentially really strong if you can awaken a tree and convince it to fight for you. I'm not 100% sure that you'll be able to do that at your table. The wording of the spell doesn't necessarily guarantee that, so I don't really ever add it to the calculations, but if you can, more power to you. Greater Restoration feels like a must-have for a character that wants to be able to support well, letting us cure even more and worse maladies. Tree Stride is a ton of fun for teleporting all over the place with a 500-foot range. Wall of Stone can provide some nice control, Wrath of Nature as well, plus some damage. Have fun with it. Pick your favorites. Oh, and then we get CR3 beast options at Druid 9. Okay, so if you take all of the books that Wizards of the Coast have put out to date for D&D 5e, looking at all the CR3 beasts, you have 11 options. And actually, one's a dinosaur and two are swarms, so realistically you probably have 8.
Oh, and 6 of those are campaign-specific beasts, so you probably haven't seen them either. Leaving us with 2.
Oh, and one of those is the killer whale, so unless we're fighting in water, we have 1 option.
The giant scorpion. Now, admittedly, the giant scorpion is pretty dang cool. It lets you automatically grapple your target when you hit them with your claws and gives you 3 attacks, which is amazing since we could potentially be smiting and adding surprise attacks to 6 hits now with Action Surge, right? What's more, one of the attacks is with our stinger, and it does an extra 4d10 of poison damage on a failed save, half on a success, and since it's a constitution save and the DC's only 12, yeah, I'm just gonna assume they'll be taking half damage every time, but hey, that's still an extra 2d10 twice in a round with Action Surge. That's not nothing. The big, massive, honkin' downside to all of this, of course, is that the giant scorpion only has a +4 to hit. +4! Come on, wizards. I mean, I'm grateful for that when I have to fight a giant scorpion, but when I want to turn into one, that is so painful. Now, to be fair, assuming that we have the spell slots to smite with, it will be a massive upgrade in damage during our Nova round on lower and even middling armor class enemies here, so maybe I should stop whining. But against high AC targets, we will be better off going with a different option, at least starting next level, because at level 15, we get Druid 10, and that means we get Elemental Wild Shape, the pinnacle of Moon Druid living. So now if we expend both of our Wild Shape uses, which is really lame, honestly, come on, we finally get some decent scaling on Wild Shape, and you make us spend both uses of it? Anyway, if we spend both of them, we can transform into an earth, air, fire, or water elemental instead of a beast. Hooray! And yes, this is the reason that I wanted to grab Find Familiar, right? So we could still have a familiar out and use both of our wild shape changes to turn into an elemental. Now, all of the options here have some cool aspects and potential uses to them, but for pure damage, we're going to want to go with either earth or air, as they both have a multi-attack action with a +8 to hit for 2d8 +5 damage each. And while the air elemental can fly and has a cool whirlwind action that can potentially do damage and throw enemies 20 feet, the earth elemental is a lot beefier with a better AC and a lot more hit points. Both of them have some nice condition immunities and resistances, but I'm guessing you're going to be going earth elemental most of the time. Know your options, feel free to use any one of them, depending on the situation. Either way, I'm going to assume we're at a +8 to hit now, with each hit doing 2d8 +5. At level 16, we'd be a druid 11, and that means 6th level spells, and as always here, nothing we're using on Nova round, but lots of great options. Heal is a fantastic and very efficient healing spell. Hero's Feast is one of the best buffs in game. Transportation via plants gives us massive world-hopping power. Windwalk would give our entire party flight, and a gaseous form. Anyway, pick your favorite. And then finally for us, at level 17, we'd be a druid 12, and yeah, ability score increase or feat, I think we finally cap wisdom here to just benefit all of our non-burst, non-wild-shaped things that we do as a druid. And we also, of course, at this level, get the ability to turn into a CR4 beast if we'd rather not go the elemental or giant scorpion route, but the options here are generally suboptimal, in my opinion. I mean, elephant is good if you don't have action surge, because you could get like two attacks if you can charge and then trample, right? Giant subterranean lizard is actually really great against medium creatures because it lets you swallow an enemy. But it does only have a +7 to hit, so you're generally going to be better off with an earth elemental or the giant scorpion thanks to the three attacks, especially against large and larger enemies who are too big to swallow. All right, for our final damage report. Since last check, we've seen all kinds of great increases to our support and utility capabilities, mostly through better spells, but also with a bump to our wisdom score. Our only real increase to our Nova round is that we can be either a giant scorpion or an elemental now. And surprisingly for me, actually, despite the much lower hit chance, the giant scorpion does come out ahead against most enemies and at the cost of only a single use of our wild shape to boot. Though, again, elementals bring a lot more tankiness to the fight, and the scorpion option is blowing more spell slots with all of that extra smiting too, so it's not just all about the Nova damage here. There's lots of things to consider, right? Regardless, against enemies with a 10 armor class here, we would, on average, do 277 damage during our burst round, and against enemies with an 18 AC, it would be 199. And we wouldn't be better off, damage-wise anyway, switching to an elemental until an enemy AC of 20 or higher, and I've marked it on the spreadsheet in yellow. And yeah, this actually is the biggest increase we've seen to our Nova round since that first damage report. And that makes me really happy to see. Compared to other builds at this level, we're kind of solidly near the bottom of tier 1. So, alright, let's bring it on home in the final thoughts. The tier score for this character, if you take all of the damage that they do at each of the armor classes that we calculate for at each of the four damage reports, and just average them into one big number, we end up with a 144. And that puts us in the bottom half of, yep, Tier 1. Right below, shocker of shockers, the Gloomstalker Assassin, who also excelled at burst damage right on round 1, but did very little other than that. And just ahead of the Swords Bard Nova build. Okay, yes, I am thoroughly flabbergasted by the numbers on this one, more so than on any other build that I've done in a very long time. I mean, sure, getting to these numbers makes some assumptions, but I make assumptions on all of my builds. It requires us to blow a lot of resources, but what Nova build have I ever done that gets up into tier 1 that doesn't blow a lot of resources to deal the kind of damage they deal? And sure, the damage we do is frankly a lot better at the early game than it is in the middle, but hey, if anything, that should be an argument in favor of this build, I think, right? Since so many campaigns end around level 10 or so, you're going to be outpacing pretty much every other character in your party, burst damage-wise at least, and you'll be doing it with an extra boatload of hit points and some really fantastic healing, support, and utility potential to boot. I love this character, and I feel like it's absolutely better than just a straight moon druid. All things considered. If and when I play a Moon Druid in-game next, I'm unquestionably going this route. And they are an S tier for sure in my book. So, that's the build for the week. I hope you enjoyed it. Man, I had fun with this one. I love it when a build surprises me. I love you guys. You are just the best. Thank you so much for all that you do for me, for the channel. I hope you have a really great day and a fantastic week. And if you don't, I hope you hang in there. You got this. I hope that you be good and kind and that you stay safe and that I see you again really soon. But until then, take care. Bye. A little bit of love goes a pretty long way. But take a look at where you started from and where you are today. You climbed mountains, you swam oceans, you got knocked down, you kept going. In the end, you know you got to say, a little bit of love goes a pretty long way. Hey, ho, oh, hey, ho. Oh. Is there a better band to come out of the 90s than Weezer? I submit that there is not. I mean, and they're still making music, and it's good. Right? Who would have thought that some nerd surf rockers would have done what they've done? But, love them. Okay. Oh, man. All right. That's it. Ha ha ha! Yes! Okay, moment of truth. Oh, yes.
Why didn't I do that months ago?
I gotta get WD-40 to sponsor this video now.
Wow.
Hold that thought. Oh man, I should have worn my Pooh Bear shirt today. Oh well. Got my druid candle going. It smells like a spring glade in here. And WD-40.
And their claws, Adam. And their claws out.
Oh, no squeak. So nice. Strongest racial options to come out of mom. Not my mom, your mom. Okay, no mom jokes.